Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, January 8, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Champaign County Government, Board Chairman to Make Call on Treasurer, Bambinek, Audit Should Come Next, by Deborah Pressey, Urbana. The authority to appoint the next Champaign County Treasurer will fall to County Board Chairman Geraldo Rosales. After current Treasurer Laurel Prussing resigned, County Executive Darlene Kloppel said she was looking into whether she, rather than the County Board Chairman, should be the one to appoint Prussing's successor in a county with an elected County Executive. Rosales said there was no question the appointment should be made by the County Board Chairman, and the issue was settled at a meeting Tuesday morning that included him, Kloppel, both party caucus chairmen, and State's Attorney Julia Reitz. "I think she's clear now," he said of Kloppel. Kloppel couldn't be reached Tuesday, but confirmed in a text message that a decision had been made and Rosales will make the appointment. Prussing's resignation is effective January 31, and Rosales said he'll officially announce the upcoming vacancy at a County Board Committee of the Whole meeting January 14. He'll be looking for assistance from both parties and others to come up with a list of treasurer candidates, and will be accepting resumes and cover letters from applicants after January 14, he said. The selected candidate will need to be confirmed by the county board, and the rest of the treasurer's unexpired 4-year term will be up for election in November. Prussing is leaving in the wake of issues that have developed in her first year in office, among them months worth of county bank accounts that have gone unreconciled. But Rosales said he doesn't believe it will be difficult to find a replacement. "Anybody walking into that, it's a little scary," he said, "but anybody who is professional and competent should have no difficulties figuring it out." Kloppel had hired an outside auditor to help the treasurer's office catch up on county bank accounts, but County Board Finance Chairman Jim Goss said the outside auditor was only able to get through 2 months' worth of the backlog, December 2018 and January 2019, before the money ran out. Rosales said he hasn't seen the outside auditor's report, but will be seeking that from Kloppel. "The audit has not been shared with us," he said. "We most likely will ask for that today." Meanwhile, former Champaign School Board member John Bambinek has called on county officials to conduct a forensic audit of the treasurer's office. That's a deep and evidentiary audit done by an independent outside professional when there's been a loss of control. And such an audit would follow the money and make sure it has been properly accounted for, he said. Laurel Prussing's resignation does not put an end to the dysfunction in county finances, he said Tuesday. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been mismanaged, and a forensic audit is necessary to find out where all the money went, why it went there, and to recover whatever is now missing. Rosales said he has always supported transparency in government and believes in whatever it takes to make sure that transparency is being provided. "My hope is that our county government will cooperate in this assurance," he said. Recreational marijuana. Parking at a premium. Police. Warning signs serving a purpose. By Ben Zichterman, Champaign. Marijuana sales have been so popular at the Sunnyside Dispensary on South Neal Street in Champaign, parking has been an issue. Customers have been using lots across the street, but even that wasn't enough, spokesman Jason Urkey said. Our champagne dispensary saw huge crowds and uncustomary parking needs for the initial launch week of recreational cannabis sales in Illinois, he said. We had arranged off-site parking, but even that didn't satisfy the needs of our customers. Going forward, he said, we are evaluating several options for future parking needs, including a pedestrian crosswalk across US 45, off-site parking with a shuttle service to our dispensary, as well as encouraging customers to use a rideshare service to minimize our parking needs. A crosswalk at St. Mary's Road is in the works, but not until 2021 or 2022, the Champaign Public Works Department said in October. Sunnyside, which was closed Monday to give its workers rest, might also want to evaluate the opportunity to relocate with more parking, pending state approvals to move a dual dispensary license, Urquhart said. Since sales launched January 1, there have been signs cautioning drivers about increased pedestrians in the area. Those appear to have been effective, as there have not been any accidents there, Champaign Police spokesman Tom Yelich said. Thankfully, this hasn't been an issue for us, he said. Obviously, we're aware of the heavy traffic and foot traffic around Sunnyside and have been in communication with them, but to date, there have not been any significant issues. Parking hasn't been an issue at New Med in Urbana, which has a larger lot, Principal Officer Keith McGinnis said. But, he said, I'm in the same position. We have a smaller store in Chicago. In Urbana, he said, the store is receiving weekly shipments and trying to maintain supply for recreational customers. But if it's on the shelf, it's going to sell, McGinnis said. Through the first 5 days of marijuana sales, state officials said there had been more than $10.8 million in sales across more than 270,000 transactions. Sales have decreased each day, according to the state. Garden Hills Listening Session. Crowd. Fix problems where they are. Hundreds pack cafeteria to voice their concerns about proposed school swap. By Anthony Zillis, Champaign. Felicia Johnson didn't hide her emotion as she stood up at the front of the hundreds of community members who filled the cafeteria at Garden Hills Academy on Tuesday night for a listening session with Unit 4 Superintendent Susan Zola. Johnson lives a few blocks away from Garden Hills. She worked for Unit 4 for decades, including a few years for Zola at Dr. Howard. The mother of 14 children, some biological, some adopted, some step, and grandmother to 60, has seen valuable programs come and go from Garden Hills, and the fact that the district was proposing swapping the school with International Prep Academy had her up in arms. They say it takes a village to raise a child, and we need that now, she said later. We need that now. In 1996, Johnson filed a complaint against the district with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights that led the district to commit to a consent decree that ran from 2002-2009, in which it promised to eliminate unwarranted disparities in access and achievement for African American students. Johnson, a former parent liaison for the district, saw it make strides with initiatives like the wraparound program, in which staff like her met with children and parents to solve their problems away from school, and Freedom Schools, which provided summer and after-school programs. But when the funding dried up, so did the programs. Rather than move Garden Hills to change its perceived reputation and help it climb the ranks in the district schools of choice policy, Johnson suggested taking steps to fix the problems where they are. It addressed the needs, she said, of the wraparound program, and it doesn't happen overnight, it's a period of time. Having a child see that you trust them and you love them, they open up. When they make a mistake, we come together and say, what do we need to do? Because what we said at the table with you last week, it didn't work. And they started taking on their own responsibility. The proposed swap would provide a much-desired K through 8 school for IPA and move the students and staff from Garden Hills, which currently has 227 open seats, to IPA's building on Kirby Avenue. Johnson was far from the only person in attendance to suggest alternatives to the swap and expressed disappointment with the plan. State Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat of Urbana, spoke first at the meeting, which was meant as a chance for community members to express their views to Zola and district administration. We're standing in a beautiful edifice that took decades to get. Decades before the North End had a facility like this, Ammons said. And then to propose to take the facility and switch the children out by busing, which was the other issue with Brown versus Board of Education. Please pay attention to what history has taught us about education equity and education access. Nathan Stevens, director of the Bruce D. Nesbitt African American Cultural Center at the University of Illinois, talked about committing resources to work with the district and Garden Hills to make it a sanctuary school, which would help students who deal with trauma. Parent Ronick Frazier talked about the school's new PTA, which she currently presides over as president. More than a dozen Garden Hills teachers stood at the front of the room as Magnet Coordinator Melissa Kearns talked about the need for commitment and support from the district and the community. Zola stood at the front of the room and listened as community members filed up to the microphone to voice complaints and criticism for over an hour and a half. This really was honestly about listening, she said at the end, offering to hang around and speak to people one-on-one. Zola said her next step is to offer proposals at Monday's school board meeting, which will include her response to the input she's gotten since she first proposed the swap in mid-December. She didn't offer any specifics on those proposals. Southside Elementary School. Peek at renovations leads to energy, smiles. By Alexandria Cobrin Champagne. Students returning to Southside Elementary following winter break may have felt like they are entering an entirely different school. Just after they left, construction workers were wrapping up the second of the three-phase $12.4 million renovation project, which included a remodeled teacher's lounge and bathrooms and some electrical work to the original building. But the biggest change that occurred the last few months was a brand new addition to the structure. First-year principal Christian Mahone said the addition houses a separate cafeteria, separate kitchen, gym, art studio, fifth-grade classrooms with collaborative breakout spaces, and a library along with a new administrative suite. I encourage teachers to take their students on a tour because now that we switched the gym, cafeteria, and library to this side of the building, we have different routes to take, Mahoney said. So we're still trying to figure out the traffic pattern to make sure there is no congestion in the hallway. When students returned from break Tuesday, Mahoney said it was nothing but high energy all day, arriving to school with bright smiles on their faces. The kids are just excited, like, can we come to your office? Absolutely, he said. So I allowed kids to sit at my desk and be principal for 12 seconds. They really did enjoy that. First grade teacher Kelly Kemper messaged parents Monday, letting them know of the changes and the effort to familiarize students with the new look building. "When I went out to pick my students up from recess, they were like, 'Do we get to go and see the new building?'" Kemper said. "When we came back, I had them turn and talk with a partner about what their favorite part of the new building was, and they were excited about the things they've never had before, like this beautiful new art studio and the cafeteria and the huge gym. I know the kids who got to go to PE today and who got to go to art today were really excited to be in those new spaces. The kids are over the moon." When the students were ecstatic about the outcome, Kemper was surprised how they reacted to the noisy construction. "On the other side of my windows is where the new art room was constructed, so I anticipated students being bothered by the noise, banging, the guys' cell phones ringing in the other room. You could hear their conversations," she said. "And I really anticipated kids being distracted and frustrated by all that. And they weren't at all. They were unbelievable." From the local section, sexual molestation charges. Jury finds Posota man unfit for trial. By Mary Schenck Urbana. A Champaign County jury took about 25 minutes Tuesday to find that a Posota man remains unfit to stand trial on criminal charges alleging he sexually molested a child more than 30 years ago and harassed a neighbor. Glenn C. Jones, 61, who listed an address on West Adams Street, had exercised his right to have a jury decide if he understands the criminal proceedings against him and can cooperate with his attorney. After hearing from a psychiatrist and Jones, the 12 men and women found that he could not meet both prongs of the fitness standard. It is rare that juries are asked to determine a client's fitness. The issue can be problematic for a defense attorney who must act in the best interests of a client whom the attorney believes doesn't fully understand the process, while at the same time acceding to their wishes regarding their constitutional rights. Jones wanted the jury to find him fit to stand trial on the underlying criminal charges, which he maintains were lodged against him by the state's attorney's office in retaliation for civil suits he filed in 2018. The state's attorney's office argued that Jones's contention was untrue, a manifestation of his paranoia, and grounds for him to be found unfit. In September 2018, Jones was charged with aggravated criminal sexual abuse in one case and stalking in a separate case and has been in custody since. Because of things he said during his initial court appearance in those cases, some of which he continued to assert during his Tuesday fitness trial, the public defender's office asked that a psychiatrist evaluate him. Champaign psychiatrist Dr. Lawrence Jekyll found Jones unfit in October 2018. On Tuesday, Jekyll testified that he reviewed all the police and mental health reports about Jones and interviewed him again after Jones was returned to Champaign County before concluding that Jones suffers from paranoia and is delusional and unable to focus and therefore unfit to stand trial. Jekyll said he disagreed professionally with the staff at McFarland Mental Health Center in Springfield, who declared Jones fit in October 2019. While the McFarland staff does good work, Jekyll said, he opined that they are overworked and lack bed space, which could have accounted for them wanting Jones sent back to Champaign County for trial. In his own behalf, Jones told the jury he disagreed with Jekyll's opinion. Prior to being criminally charged, Jones had filed two civil lawsuits in Champaign County, which named as defendants State's Attorney Julia Reitz, the Village of Pasotum, and the Champaign County Sheriff's Office. I was a Cub Scout leader and discovered that the Catholic Church, some members, were being molested, Jones said, of the impetus for the suits. The county, village, and state put asbestos in a building I bought, he added. When nothing happened promptly with his first civil complaint for $100 million in damages, filed in July 2018, Jones said he filed a second complaint in August 2018, seeking $500 billion in damages as a tactic. Jones told the jury that after the first lawsuit was filed, they came to my property and threw beer cans on my property, he said, of the village. That's intimidation. That's why I increased the amount of damages sought. He also maintained that he received letters from the state's attorney's office and someone from the village saying they would work with me. Among other things, Jones told the jury was that Reitz came to his house on Halloween 2012 dressed as a clown with a member of the village board. He said that during their meeting, I showed her how I was making electricity, and I made them caramel corn. I had all the evidence on the Cub Scout case in a cooler on the picnic table. Under questioning by Assistant State's Attorney Kristen Alferink, Jones also admitted that he spray painted his own house with references to scouts and pedophiles. He also told her he was attacked repeatedly by other patients while at McFarland. Asked if he knew why he was criminally charged, Jones said, "I'm not sure. I'm struggling with that. I did not commit these crimes. I did put up lights to know who was in my yard." That was an apparent reference to the allegation in the stalking case in which Jones allegedly shined bright lights into the home of a man he was upset with after the man put up a flagpole and a light to eliminate the flag in his own yard. There was no other testimony regarding any of the allegations in the underlying criminal cases. DeFantis ordered that Jones be sent back to the Department of Human Services for more treatment and set a review hearing for February 14. But the veteran jurist lamented that that means Jones will probably be forced to wait weeks in the Champaign County Jail until a bed is available at the chronically busy McFarland Mental Health Center. The state can spend $300 million to move train tracks 6 miles in Springfield, but it can't provide the basics for us to care for our psychiatric defendants, said a frustrated DeFantis. Urbana Police. Judge dismisses lawsuit alleging retaliation. By Ben Zichterman, Urbana. A man who settled with the city of Champaign for $225,000 in 2016 over his complaint that former police officer Matt Rush used excessive force against him had his separate federal lawsuit accusing Urbana Police of retaliating against him dismissed. The suit filed on behalf of Benjamin Mann and his girlfriend, Samantha Wade, alleged that the Urbana officers retaliated because he stood up to the city of Champaign regarding Rush's alleged behavior on March 16, 2014. The complaint sought damages for Mann and Wade on 11 counts, including retaliation, false arrest, fabrication of evidence, and illegal search. Two of those were dismissed in December, including claims against a University of Illinois police officer, and the remaining 9 were rejected last week by U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric I. Long. There is no evidence the officers considered or even cared that Mann was a plaintiff in a lawsuit against the Champaign Police Department, Long concluded. Rush reached an agreement with Champagne in 2017 that paid him $50,000 in return for an end to his grievances and a promise that he would never work again as a Champagne officer. Mann's attorney, Schnurr Nathan, did not respond to a request for comment, nor did Urbana City Attorney James Simon. Mann's most recent lawsuit stemmed from two incidents in 2017. In the first, he alleges that on March 19, officers arrested him and his girlfriend in his Urbana apartment after a car crash pushing him to the ground after he reached for the pocket of his pants, according to Long's summary of the incident. Long said that while Mann claimed he was putting his fake tooth in his pocket, the officer thought he could be reaching for a weapon, as dispatch had notified officers that one may be present. Under any view of the facts, it was reasonable for the officers to use the force they used, Long wrote in his 37-page opinion. Mann and Wade were both found not guilty by different juries of resisting a police officer, and the other criminal charges stemming from the incidents were dismissed. In the second incident on July 30, a neighbor living below Mann called 911 because he had heard noises from the apartment above him that he thought indicated domestic violence, according to Long's summary. When officers arrived at Mann's apartment, they said he opened the door a few inches, refused to let them in, and closed the door on their feet, according to Long. The officers searched Mann's name in a police database and found a warrant for his arrest out of DeKalb County, Long said. They then returned to his apartment and used a battering ram to break down the door and arrest him, Long said. The facts known to the officers at the time of the arrest also reasonably supported their belief that Mann committed a battery and obstructed a peace officer because they saw Mann close a door on two officers' feet. Long wrote, Mann closed the door on the officers' feet, and although he denies the context, Mann does not deny doing it. The criminal charges in this arrest were also later dismissed. Champaign County Courts, Stolen Gun Nets Man 8 Years, by Mary Schenck Urbana. A Champaign man who admitted he possessed a gun stolen from Urbana earlier this year was sentenced Tuesday to 8 years in prison. Devon Hart, 24, whose last known address was in the 1400 block of Summerlin Lane, pleaded guilty in November to possession of a stolen firearm. Assistant State's Attorney Joel Fletcher said on March 31st, a man living on Christopher Circle in Urbana left his gun in his unlocked car. The next morning, he discovered change and the gun, last seen in a black case, missing. Later that same day, the case was recovered in the 1000 block of North James Street in Champaign. Fletcher said it was sent to the state's crime lab, where Hart's fingerprints were found on an owner's manual that was inside the case. Hart was charged in early August with possession of the gun. To aggravate the sentence that Judge Roger Weber imposed, Fletcher presented the judge with evidence linking Hart to a fleeing and eluding case May 6.